You're listening to Perspective on WFHR 1320 AM 97.5 FM. I'm Melissa Kay, bringing you news in our community. During this interview, I'm talking with Senator Patrick Teston on Friday, January 16th, 2026. Thank you for joining me, Patrick, to bring the community an update from the 24th Senate District.
Hey, happy to be on and Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year. Well, let's dive right in with discussing legislation that you introduced last month dealing with regulating hemp-derived cannabinoid products. We have states around us that have fully legalized and decriminalized these products, such as Minnesota, Michigan, and Illinois, and states that only allow CBD oil with THC, such as ourselves, Iowa, and Indiana. Here in Wisconsin, we have some confusion on what is allowed and what is not. So could you please explain in simple terms what this bill does for our listeners?
Yeah, so what this bill aims to do is to provide some regulatory framework for the hemp industry, as well as the general public and consumers who utilize these products. So I've been a strong proponent of the hemp industry ever since my first legislative session back in 2017, when we authored legislation that became law that reintroduced hemp back to the state of Wisconsin. And in the wake of the 2018 Farm Bill that was passed by Congress and signed into law by President Obama at that time, there was a provision within that bill that actually created more or less a loophole that allowed for hemp processors to essentially make intoxifying hemp products. So many of your listeners, if they go into a grocery store, convenience store, liquor store, hemp-derived seltzers and beverages have become a huge industry here in the state in just the last couple of years. But at the same time, they are completely unregulated. There is no age requirements. There are no dose requirements. And so that's created a lot of uncertainty. And we introduced legislation back in December that would essentially create some guardrails for this industry, making sure that only individuals 21 and older can purchase these products, making sure that there's truth in labeling, that these aren't being advertised towards kids, that there's a certificate of analysis, independent third-party testing on these products to ensure that these are products that are safe for consumers. And so this has been a very difficult bill to navigate because here in the legislature, there are a lot of thoughts as it relates to the hemp industry. There are some of my colleagues who would prefer to not have any of these products whatsoever and just outright ban them, which I think would be extremely unfortunate if that were to ever happen, because there are a lot of legitimate businesses employing great Wisconsinites all across the state. And more importantly, consumers have turned to these products because they are looking for alternatives as opposed to going out and having too many old fashions at an establishment on a Friday night and waking up the next day with a really bad headache. Mm-hmm. And so, there's three bills that are working their way through the legislature right now. There's one that would outright ban these products, which I don't support. Another proposal that's been authored by a couple of my colleagues that would essentially throw all these products in the three tier, which I think, while it's well-intentioned, and three tier and treating these like alcohol. While I think that's a well-intentioned bill, I think it goes a little too far and would essentially kill a lot of these businesses that have grown and prospered in the last several years. And then the legislation that I've authored, we've worked very closely with folks who operate within the hemp industry, and I think it's a sensible approach. And I think that is the best vehicle moving forward to get something done and provide some certainty and consumer protections that are desperately needed. And quite frankly, what the hemp industry has been asking for since day one. And so we've been having very thoughtful negotiations with various stakeholders. The bill was heard in the Senate Agriculture and Revenue Committee, which I'm the chairman of, just last week. And we had an incredible public hearing. We probably had over 100 people show up and testify as to why these products are so valuable and why consumers are moving to them. And a lot of the business owners who have grown these businesses organically over the last several years and talking about their success stories and how their products have actually helped people. And so my hope is that we can continue over the next month here to navigate this and hopefully thread the needle and come up with a good compromise that provide some certainty for this industry at a time when there's a lot of uncertainty right now with some of the actions that were taken at the federal government, where if nothing happens or changes at the federal level, a lot of these products are going to be outlawed come November in the eyes of the federal government. But mm-hmm. at the same time, it's sort of like states that have done full-blown recreational marijuana use, where, well, technically illegal federally, the feds haven't gone in and cracked down. And so at the very least, we want to have some regulations put in place to at least, if nothing changes at the federal level, to have intrastate commerce here in the state and allow this industry to continue to prosper and thrive within our borders.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you mentioned the old fashions, which are a favorite of many in the state. But the hemp producers are in favor of the bill, including the Wisconsin Farmers Union. And those lobbying against the bill include the Tavern League and the Wisconsin Beer Distributors.
Yeah, I mean, there are some very heavy players and hitters down here in Madison, and they have very powerful voices. And that's not to diminish them or discredit them by any means, but the approach that they want to have all these products, all the gummies, the oils, the tinctures, the beverages thrown into the three-tier system of how we regulate alcohol, would essentially shut down a number of these businesses. And I can understand from their standpoint why they want to take this route. Essentially what it boils down to, and it's the 800-pound elephant in the room, is that this is about market share. If you take a look at the national trends as it relates to beer and alcohol sales, they have been on the decline in recent years, and especially younger individuals, those individuals who are 21 to 35 are looking for alternatives. And also on the other end of that coin, in older individuals, seniors, are making the switch as well. And so as a result, I think by and large, and again, they won't say this publicly, but you know, it's not very hard to figure out and get to the bottom of it. They want to capture all these products and have them thrown in three tiers. So they have to run through a distributor as opposed to allowing for direct-to-consumer sales, like many of the companies who came down and testified, who are Wisconsin-based and do a fantastic job. It would be a complete disruption to their business model. And that's why I think the approach that they're taking and pushing for is a little too heavy-handed. And I think the approach that we have taken is the more middle of the road and really trying to thread the needle to find that right balance that doesn't disrupt this industry, doesn't shut down Wisconsin businesses. And hopefully through our continued conversations, I'm hoping that we're going to be able to find some common ground to get something done before between now and the end of March.
Mm-hmm. And one of the entities that did speak in opposition to it is the Children's Wisconsin and Children's Wisconsin Poison Center. They expressed concerns about the packaging that appeals to children and edibles that look like candy, because for children that can't read yet, a gummy looks like a gummy.
No, you're 100% right. And they bring up some very valid points and concerns. And I think that's why we need some sensible regulation. And one of the provisions within the bill that I've authored is that you can't market this stuff to kids. You can't use caricatures or cartoons or, you know, mimic them to look like other popular products and candies that, you know, kids are drawn towards. Because right now, as it stands, because of the federal loophole that was created in the wake of the passage of the 2018 Farm Bill, it is essentially the Wild Wild West. Now, most retailers, most of these companies that make these products, they age verify. They don't sell them to minors who are less than 21. But technically, there is no law that says you can't sell these to minors. And there certainly have been some negative headlines and stories where, in fact, kids have stumbled across these products, have consumed them, and have landed themselves in the ER because they ate too many. And that's why, you know, we have in our language that these have to be kid tamper-proof containers. You can't market them to kids. And then the other component too that we have laid out in this bill is making sure that there are minimum requirements as far as the number of milligrams that can be placed in these products as it relates to any cannabinoid or delta 9, which is the intoxicating cannabinoid within hemp products. And so, you know, I think we're having, again, very productive conversations to try and get this bill done. And I'm confident and optimistic that we'll get there because we need to get something done. And more importantly, we need to provide some certainty for this industry and for the consumers in every corner of the state who utilize these products on a daily basis, whether it's for dealing with things like chronic pain, PTSD, or just individuals who like to consume hemp-derived beverages as opposed to going out and having a brandy old-fashioned with their fish fry on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a brief pause here to hear from our sponsors. I'm Melissa Kay talking with Senator Patrick Teston, and you're listening to Perspective on 1320 AM, 97.5 FM, WFHR. You're listening to Perspective on WFHR 1320 AM, 97.5 FM. I'm Melissa Kay talking with Senator Patrick Teston. Senator, we were talking about the hemp-derived legislation that you've been working on. Another bill that you've been working on is Assembly Bill 683, which deals with telecommunication infrastructure and bans Wisconsin providers from using foreign adversary-linked equipment. It also requires removal and replacement of existing equipment. And now, the Secure and Trusted Communications Network Act was instituted in 2020, requiring the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, to address this issue. Most bills have an origin story. How did this one start?
So this is a very critically important bill. And this is one bill as part of a broader package called the Safeguard Wisconsin package of bills that aims to crack down on foreign adversaries' undue influence in the state of Wisconsin. So most people would probably think, why on earth is the state legislature tackling foreign policy issues? And the fact of the matter is, while most of these issues are handled at the federal level through the federal government and through the existing Trump administration, they've done a phenomenal job. But what has happened is that a lot of our foreign adversaries, particularly the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, have turned to state governments, local units of government, higher institutions of education, as well as even private industry to exert their influence, which seeks to undermine our very existence and our way of life. And one of the bills within this package relates to our infrastructure and telecommunications. So what's absolutely terrifying about this, and there's an organization that we have been working with called State Armor. They're based out of Texas, and they have really taken the bull by the horns and going into various states to highlight the concerns and the risks and the vulnerabilities that states face as it relates to some of our foreign adversaries. And late last fall, there was a story done by 60 Minutes where it highlighted how a small community in the state of Maine, which has no military significance or no real national security implications, the CCP was able to hack into the wastewater treatment facility and it went unnoticed. And that is terrifying because it would not take much for a bad actor, a foreign actor, to essentially poison a water supply for an entire community. And as it relates to our telecommunications, if you think about our 911, our first responders, if for some reason we had equipment installed here in the state where there were back channels within our transmitters, our radio systems that could essentially shut these systems down and there was a critical incident, we would be rendered paralyzed to respond. And that could lead to a number of other issues and concerns and mass panic and chaos. And so really trying to do what we can to be proactive at the state level to ensure that we making sure that our tax dollars, when we do procurement, when we're talking about infrastructure and our telecoms, that tax dollars are not being spent and invested on companies that have ties to foreign adversaries, such as countries like the Chinese Communist Party, Russia, and others. And so we've had, I thought the testimony in the assembly committee went extremely well. We had a number of experts come and testify, talk about the highlights and dangers. And if anyone's interested and wants to be kept up late at night from just some of the scary scenarios that exist with some of the foreign adversaries and the work that they're doing to undermine American life, State Armor did a threat assessment. It's about a 65-page document. It's a very easy read, but it's also eye-opening, and it's also extremely terrifying what some of the efforts that they are taking. And so we just want to make sure that we are being proactive rather than reactive and doing what we can to ensure that state tax dollars are not going towards entities and countries that are not our friends or our allies.
Okay. Well, the bill, to my understanding, doesn't give any money toward these replacement equipment. How is that going to affect consumers or businesses if telecommunication providers take on these costs themselves?
Yeah, so great question. And there's actually been money set aside at the federal level to help with the telecoms go through and essentially do an inventory of their existing equipment. And even in some of the testimony that we heard from some of the telecoms who had expressed some reservations or some heartburn, even acknowledged that by some point this year, they will have completed that process. And so there really shouldn't be any need for any state dollars to go in to replace any of this equipment, because it's already being done right now from the federal mandate that you had referenced earlier. Now, if for some reason that changes and, you know, there's a shortfall, the good news is that we just got new updated revenue projections from our nonpartisan fiscal bureau yesterday, and the state's facing a very healthy surplus. So there is enough money within our general fund right now that we can probably offset and help assist if there's any undue costs that pop up. But okay, by and large, based on the testimony that we heard from the organization that represents the telecommunications companies, like AT&T and Verizon and others, that a lot of this is already in the works, it's being taken care of. And so I don't foresee any undue cost in the foreseeable future. And so I think we're in a good spot there.
Another requirement of the bill is a public map showing locations that still have prohibited equipment. Wouldn't this put those areas more at risk from the very entities you're trying to shield Wisconsinites from?
You know, that another great point. I think first and foremost, you know, we just want to be able to recognize that there are any vulnerabilities or equipment out there that, you know, could be a potential problem or could present a potential security risk. We should have a good idea where that equipment is. So in the event that if there are any issues, it can easily be identified, and then these providers can go in and get that equipment replaced.
Okay. Well, let's move on now to something that's capturing a lot of attention and headlines, and that's ICE activity in the neighboring state of Minnesota. There are even some rumors about ICE agents being spotted in Wisconsin. Are there issues with the fact that ICE is not cooperating with local police, in your opinion?
You know, I don't know all the details of, you know, the operations that are occurring in states like Minnesota and other states. You know, I do think, you know, we have to tread cautiously. And obviously, anytime there are any officer-involved shootings, we have to do our due diligence and allow the facts to come out as the case develops. And one of the concerns that I've had, and even going back to the George Floyd incident back in the summer of 2020, is that there were so many individuals and elected officials who rushed the judgment. And before all the facts came out, and as a result, we saw a number of protests, riots. We certainly experienced that here in Wisconsin with the riots in places like Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Madison, that unfortunately, individuals were harmed, businesses were shut down and shattered, and a lot of violence. And, you know, I guess what I would suggest to individuals is, you know what, let's wait for all the information to come out, allow investigators to do their due diligence. And more importantly, you know, when you interact with law enforcement, you know, there's a way to do it right and there's a way to do it wrong. And unfortunately, what we saw, how things shook out in Minnesota, it was a tragic and unfortunate turn of events. And, you know, we should be mindful of that. There is a way for individuals to express their concerns and voice their opinions in a peaceful manner. But when things turn violent, we really need to tread cautiously, because it's a very tenuous situation, and we want to ensure that no other individuals are putting themselves in danger, and hopefully no one else is getting hurt or harmed, and allowing law enforcement to do their jobs. And in some of these unfortunate situations, to allow the investigation to play out and allow the facts to come to the forefront before, you know, people have a knee-jerk reaction and cause more harm.
So, related question, do you think it's a good idea to cooperate with the 287G, which is the agreement that Wood County Sheriff's Department has signed, giving deputies some immigrations and custom enforcement authority Do you feel that that is good for our community?
Look, I think it's important that we have to recognize that we are a nation of laws and rules, law and order. And, you know, for those individuals who are in our country illegally, they've broken the law. And since the Trump administration has come back into power as of January of last year, they have made it explicitly clear that, you know, we have a broken immigration system here in this country. They have given ample opportunity for individuals to self-deport. And there is certainly a serious concern here because there are some individuals here in our country who are bad actors and who have committed crimes. And we have seen this playing out in horrible stories and examples all across this country. And so, you know, I have no qualms or issue with local law enforcement partnering with federal law enforcement to ensure that we are abiding by the laws of not just our state, but of this country, and making sure that, you know, we are getting individuals who are not here legally, getting them back to their home countries. And then hopefully Congress will enact sensible immigration reform that will provide a pathway for those individuals to ideally come back and have an opportunity at the American way of life, just like many individuals who have come through our country legally and done right and done it by the books. And so I don't have any concerns with local law enforcement partnering with our federal counterparts as it relates to enforcing our immigration laws.
Are you considering any state level legislation over ICE at this time?
I have not seen any legislation that has been moving forward on the Republican side. I don't know if any of my Democratic colleagues have introduced legislation. I'm sure there's probably discussions ongoing in the respective Democrat caucuses in both houses, but you know, we'll wait and see. Obviously, I think one way or the other, it would not likely pass any Democrat legislation that would restrict law enforcement's ability to enforce our laws. And on the flip side of that coin, I think we'd probably be hard pressed to pass a bill that would support the efforts ongoing throughout the country and throughout the state that Governor Evers would support. So we sort of find ourselves in this unique stalemate of divided government. And so, you know, sort of letting things play out at the federal level, and if local agencies want to sign MOUs and work with federal law enforcement, I don't have any qualms with that.
All right. Well, we are out of time. It's always a pleasure talking with you, Senator Patrick Teston. I'm Melissa Kay. Senator Patrick Teston represents the 24th Senate District. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us today, Senator.
Happy New Year.
Yes. And thank you to our listeners joining us for news in our community on Perspective 1320 AM, 97.5 FM, WFHR.